can take the future. Even if you fail, I believe in angels. Something good in everything I see. I believe in angels. When I know the time is right for me, I'll cross the stream. I have a dream.
We believe in angels, too, here at WHFR. Thanks to Joe for another great big band Broadway and beyond for the last hour, Mamma Mia, and the music of ABBA. Really great Broadway musical. Okay, it is WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Hi, and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And today is our auto show special review. I know the auto show in Detroit only has the weekend to go, but nonetheless, now's about time for us to talk about it and maybe look at what it means. We hope to have a special guest calling in a couple of minutes, a very important automobile journalist, in fact, in this local area, and we'll talk to him about the auto show and about their magazine, too. And so that will begin in just a few moments. Other things we're going to try to get in today, comments about Governor Snyder's State of the State speech, especially because he didn't mention anything that really directly affects us here in this area, except he's in favor of the second bridge to Canada. And Dennis Reimars is here with me, Jay Koronek, and I didn't have his mic on. So Dennis was nodding and actually said...
Yes. Well, no, it affects us because they call it the Downriver Bridge.
Right. It could be closer to us. Probably will be a little bit closer anyway than the Ambassador Bridge is at this point. And also the fact that for our auto show special here, he didn't mention the automobile industry at all.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah. Michigan is the automobile state, or Detroit, the motor capital.
Sure.
I know the shine is off the gloss, but the gloss is off the shine. Whatever. We're not as central anymore. But just giving up on automobile manufacturing, was kind of interesting that there was no direct mention about what to do about automobiles except just let them go down. Although he did mention many things about the entrepreneurial spirit and helping businesses get going and get established. And we do have some initiatives in Michigan from GM and Ford to expand, and that's important.
Right.
Okay. And also, we're going to be hoping to talk about, an important financial forum presented by Mayor O'Reilly is going to happen Thursday, January 27th, next week Thursday, Henry Ford Centennial Library, 7 p.m. Interestingly, the story was in last Wednesday's Press and Guide. Today is the 21st of January. If you're listening as a podcast and you don't know what you're listening to, January 21, 2011. And they left out the date and time. Had the location, but they left out the day, date, and time. And it was even on page 1A. Good for them. Important public meetings should be up front, I think.
Sure.
And they should be more than a week in advance.
Sure.
Or more than 2 days in advance. And often you get the paper, and, oh, the meeting's going to be in a day or two.
Happens all
and
the time.
And you can't plan for it, or maybe you don't even read the paper until after it's over. So they did everything right except include the day, date, and time.
Well, maybe they
hilarious.
Just want to wait. Just go there and wait.
Oh. Right. Okay. We're getting a call in. We're going to take it live. Hang on. Hi, it's WHFR-FM. Jay speaking. Can I help you? Hi, Mr. Alterman. Yes, we've been expecting your call, and we're going to put you on live right away. And we're going to start by talking about yourself and Car and Driver a little bit, and then go primarily sort of an auto show review. And about 15, 20 minutes, that's good for you. Thank you very much. Hang on. Okay, as you probably heard there, I'm just a little bit off mic, and our guest should be on the phone. Hi, Mr. Alderman, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Eddie Alderman, who is editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine. It's really amazing to me how automobile magazines, and I will say my own background, I've subscribed to automobile magazines since I was 12, and I'm quite a few decades older than that now. Car and Driver has been one of my favorite over the years. Currently, I do subscribe, just so you know, okay?
Great.
But I also subscribe to Automobile and Car Magazine from England, which is
a lovely
magazine. Too bad it's about $110 a year to subscribe from over here, but they have to send it through airmail and so on, so it's still a little bit relevant. And I have to say, too, although I don't subscribe to AutoWeek, I always watch their daily video news. So that's they're really putting a lot of effort into that, and it's fun. It's only like 3 minutes or something, but it's like a little mini newscast. So I know Karin, but I was going to mention that Car and Driver and, of course, Road and Track Magazine, Automobile, they're all based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at least editorial
offices.
Road and
Track's actually in Newport Beach, California, but AutoWeek is here,
yeah.
And Automobile and Car and Driver are right down the road from you on 94 in Ann Arbor.
Right, yeah. So we still have, Michigan still might be called an automobile state, if only because we have a good number of the automobile magazines based here. In fact, I was interested, there's a digital-only magazine called Winding Road. I think David E. Davis Jr. helped to get that started a couple years.
Yeah, and he's one of our contributors.
Right, he's back home.
I would say that Detroit and Michigan are much more the automobile state for more reasons than just having car magazines here. It's amazing how much they're still building in the state of Michigan and Ontario.
Yeah, expansions on the part of GM and Ford Motor Company and some other like enterprises for, I guess, batteries and other things are beginning to happen again.
Absolutely.
In Detroit. So we're certainly not going downhill here. But I was going to say about Car and Driver and the other magazines, it's amazing when you look at the second or third page of the magazine, you see not just an editor and a few writers, but you have like three or four different staffs. I mean, one is probably more involved in marketing and sales and ad sales for your magazine, which is essential. And then you have, of course, your regular writers and road testers and editorial commentators. But then you also have a huge web team for your internet applications and website.
Well, that's exactly right. And you hit on that point a little bit earlier, Jay, that we can no longer afford to think of ourselves as just a print magazine anymore.
No.
We're really a car content brand. As much as that word is overused, we have mobile applications, a big push into the iPad with an app that we launched in November that's been doing really, really well for us, a website, obviously, events, and of course the magazine. But the interesting thing there is, and you hit on it with all the people that it takes to produce this brand, is that we can't just shovel the same information we put into the magazine onto the website.
No.
The website demands its own kind of information. Mm-hmm. It demands, news and a lot of research for car buyers, whereas the magazine is more of a long form lean back sort of experience, a more kind of escapist leisure experience than the website is, where you're going hunting for information.
I'm always especially looking in the magazine for really good writing and good description, and sometimes, of course, the road test and the various articles that are more technically based are really fantastic information, and it must cost you a fortune for the R&D work behind some of those stories. But the really good writing, the extended length, that's what a magazine is best for, and I know I really enjoy all aspects of all the car magazines, because there's a little something different in each one of their mediums.
Right, and that's what it's all about. It's about getting the right content onto the right platform, and we don't really have a news section in the magazine anymore, because by the time it comes out, it's 3 months out of date.
Sure.
So we really restrict news and scoops and stuff like that to the website and to our mobile platforms and the more immediate digital stuff, whereas, print is a little bit more reflective. It's more of a monthly feast where we bring you the most important things happening in the world of cars that month.
Let me also commend you for the iPod app. I have an iPod Touch, and people could get this on their iPhone also. Last year was every 3 years I lease a new car, and I spent about 6 months of test driving and reading and subscribing to all the magazines.
Sure.
And I go to the dealers two or three times and drive the salespeople crazy asking questions and so on. But the most helpful thing of giving me instant information and updated frequently too was your iPod iPhone app, which has a tremendous sort of like buyer's guide section of facts and details on pretty much all the models out there.
Well, yeah, that's a good example of how we're trying to tailor the content. If you're out there shopping and you want to quickly compare a couple of cars that you're looking to drive, we've got that right at your fingertips, and we want to even push harder into that.
Yeah. I mean, it's on your website,
too. We can tell you what kind of inventory you can see on lots.
Sure. I was saying it's on your website also, but it seemed like the iPod app was updating every time I looked at it, every day, and really had the very, very late, might even been more updated than the website, although that shouldn't be the way it is, but I found it extremely handy.
Yeah. Well, great. If you get your hands on an iPad, you'll see the way we're adapting our content to that medium. We also, we not only have the magazine stories with additional photos and videos, but we also have a news feed that comes in there and a way to talk and comment about the stories with other readers. So it's a pretty exciting time right now.
Yeah, that can be a lot of fun. Apparently, Apple is still, and there is a significant cost of those monthly iPad editions.
Ours is free, actually.
Oh, is it? I thought it was $2.99. I thought I just looked at the website, but
We're still waiting. Personally, I don't think that it's fair to charge somebody who's a subscriber same stuff over again. We're looking to figure out a way to bundle the subscription.
That would be cool. Although the subscriptions, like most of the car magazines, since you do have a lot of advertisers from car companies, are really inexpensive. I can't believe how whatever the offer is, $10 a year for 12 issues or something more
deal.
Than that, hardly pays for the postage, I assume, much less the printing and the people behind it. But the ad sales, luckily, help support that. So
sure.
It's one of the best buys in magazines, I think, is to subscribe to an automobile magazine.
But, absolutely. But I still love buying magazines off the newsstand. I don't know about you.
I do too.
I still think it's worth the extra price just to get it immediately. To be able to compare the issues and feel them and look and see exactly what you're getting.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, well, the reason we're talking to Eddie Alterman, who is the editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine, big multimedia operation that we've just been talking about. I assume, of course, you, as everybody else in this area, probably been down to the auto show. What do you think you can sort of sum up, either from your own opinion about the purpose and meaning of the show? We all have favorite cars, I guess. I went down this last Tuesday. But what do you think you could sum up about the show, let's say the Car and Driver opinion, too, if you can reflect the opinions of your staff a little bit? Go ahead. You've got the floor now.
This was really a no-nonsense year especially from the domestic manufacturers who came through probably the most trying and darkest period in their histories. So the most frequently overheard phrase on the show floor on the press days was, "Good to see you here." Everybody was just glad to be back in the business, having passed through the bankruptcies and the terrible bad press, and people were just focused on product, and that's really the lifeblood of this business. And what I think was interesting this year about the North American Auto Show, very few concept cars. The only concept cars came from, Ford with their Vertrek concept, which was a presage of the next Escape. But the Porsche 918 RSR and Kia and Hyundai had some concepts.
Right.
But for the most part, it was real cars that are going to be on the road soon, and not the typical SUVs and flights of fancy that you used to see at the Detroit Auto Show. It's really Detroit getting back to its basic blocking and tackling, building cars in small fuel-efficient segments. And we saw some great stuff from General Motors and Ford on that front, and Chrysler, too. General Motors had a new, what they call B-segment small car called the Sonic that replaces the Aveo and does a really good job of, I think, hitting the sweet spot in that market in terms of pricing and styling and power. It's got the cruise engine in it. It's going to be around $13,000 to $17,000.
I have to say,
they also showed something that was really interesting, which was the Buick Verano.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
Yeah, from a distance. I was going to say about the Sonic. I drove the Aveo once as a rental car and thought it was one a near death trap experience.
Yeah, I think you're not alone in that.
You know, but I certainly hope the Sonic handles a little better. I know it's supposed to be a little sportier, perhaps too. Therefore, maybe better handling overall.
Well, that's a real trend in this industry. You know, pushing more features and content and safety and substance into these smaller vehicles, which, let's be honest, have grown themselves. You know, a small car today would be sort of the size of a mid-size car 10, 15 years ago. You look at something like the Chevy Cruze or the Ford Focus, and they're sort of the size of an old Honda Accord or Toyota Camry. So there's some growth in that segment, but the price have come down, and I think what's really, really interesting is to watch the companies focus on the really important stuff, which are the front drive sedans and front drive crossovers that they're based off. Those are the big volume segments.
Yeah, of course, people go to auto shows, I guess, for a number of reasons. Certainly just to be dazzled by the look of a new car, all polished and so on. And you do get a chance, in the less expensive cars anyway, to sit behind the wheel and actually try out the size inside the car to see if that's a good fit. And that's valuable information, although just I think people should look way beyond that before they spend all the money on a car. But that's sometimes enough for many people.
It's enough to get you excited, at least, and say, here's my list of things I'm going to go test drive, that's for sure.
Right, right.
So it does provide a very useful function. And, you know, I just think that people are coming off the sidelines now. People are getting a little bit more confident in the economy. We saw that at the end of last year. There was a lot of retail sales helped by kind of the return of leasing and deals getting a little bit better on cars. So there's nothing like a new car, and people love getting new vehicles, that's for sure.
I was impressed this year that the electric and hybrid cars, especially electric cars, they seem to be all folded in with internal combustion models from each manufacturer.
That's a great observation.
The auto show in the past has always like sequestered them, like there's something weird or strange. They put them in the basement, or they put them off to the one end. And sure, that maybe draws more attention to electric for its own sake, but it's really embraced now more as things that are on the drawing boards, but in fact going into production the next couple of years too.
Well, that's really clear, and that's another big theme of the show, is that electrification is coming, and it's going to be, well, I think that the hardware is ready for prime time, but I'm not sure that the volume is going to be there. But what we're seeing is that there's just more choice in terms of body style, in terms of pricing, in terms of segments, but also in terms of the kind of propulsion you want. If you have a tiny commute, or you live in a really tight community and you don't have a lot of driving to do, then something like the Nissan Leaf might be the kind of vehicular expression you want to make.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Something like the Chevy Volt, which has won every award that it's been up for, basically, including our 10 best.
Yeah.
That car is a nice bridge between the pure electrified car like a Nissan Leaf and something like a Prius hybrid. It's much more of an EV that you can drive as your main car.
Well, it's the first plug-in hybrid to be really readily available across the U.S. I guess the next Prius is going to eventually, in like 2 years, have a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, and it's not going to be quite as well-developed or kind of elegant in its execution as the Volt is. Mm-hmm. The Volt, I think, is very, very smart. And as I was saying earlier, a battery, pure battery-powered vehicle, because of its range limitation, isn't going to be right for everybody. Mm-hmm. But if you have a small commute and you have to, you know, do the occasional long trip, then the Volt might be perfect.
Yeah. I was most impressed just visually, because I hadn't seen it in person, I have to say, price be no object, Ferrari 458 Italia.
Oh, yeah.
It was just lovely sitting there. And I've seen the, I watched the BBC version of Top Gear show, and I saw Jeremy Clarkson driving that son of a gun, and just a very, very exciting car. Automatic transmission and four-wheel drive, I believe. And
yeah. No, not four-wheel drive.
No, not that one. Okay, but the new one
the
just,
new
came,
one is
just announced
drive.
Today, Ferrari FF, I guess. So.
Right. But, yeah, just a breathtaking machine. And what's kind of amazing to me about Ferrari is they have the greatest design heritage, arguably, of anybody besides maybe General Motors. And they don't look back. They always look forward. And the 458 Italia is a really, really avant-garde styling statement. Very, very beautiful. Just a knockout.
I have to commend Car and Driver for your test 10 best cars of the year, although I wonder, it stated that in your awards, the cars had to be either all new or those with significant updates. So cars that were old but still available were not on the list?
If they won the previous year, they returned.
Oh, they
they
were already. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But one of your criteria was that the cars had to be under $80,000 retail.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I mean, I think in the far distant past, I've always watched the Car and Driver Best Awards each year. Didn't you even have different categories like under $20,000 and then $20,000 to $50,000, or you had a different price break. You had the same categories, but in different prices.
We've mixed it up a lot over the years, and the award has a long, long history, 3 decades. But right now, for us, when we look at the market, and we kind of make this evaluation every year when we talk about the rules. If you can't build a great car for less than $80,000, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
There's so much good stuff in every part of the sub $80,000 category that we can really cover the whole market without ever getting into the super expensive hyper exotics. I mean, of course, a $300,000 Ferrari is going to be great.
Yeah,
we don't need to tell you that.
That's certainly been true. And what is the Bugatti Veyron? Is that a couple $1 million?
Well, for the newest one, yeah, it's €2 million. So $2.6 million.
It's nice to dream a little bit with those, covering those things. But for example, I'm the kind of person that's sort of a minimalist when it comes to cars. I mean, I have owned a number of BMWs, but I've always special ordered them with like nothing on them, to keep them able to be bought by me, looking for a low enough price. So if the beginning price is like $30,000 as my two-seat BMW Z3 was a couple years back, well, about 10 years ago, that's what I bought it for. No options, nothing. And it's too bad that some people think of some of these cars, like BMWs or whatever, as $50,000 cars or $80,000. And they have models, of course, that go that high. But sometimes I wonder about test reports. I think Auto Week just did Nissan Cube, and they got it loaded with everything. And so it was a $24,000 car. And But it's not really a $24,000 car. Right. I mean, you can get it for like maybe 16 or 18 or something like that. And of course, I'm philosophically against GPS. I mean, if you don't know which way is north, I don't think you should drive at all. But nonetheless, I know it's cool for some people. One of the things Motor Trend does, and it especially when David E. Davis was the editor many years ago and Brock Yates was there. Of course, Brock Yates.
Car and Driver, you mean?
Car and Driver, yes. What did I say? I'm sorry.
Motor Trend.
No. I didn't mean Motor Trend, no. Brock Yates was famous for the Sea to Shining Sea Memorial Trophy Dash, where they broke a lot of speed limits, trying to see who would be able to drive on the regular highways fastest from coast to coast. And they did that for a couple years, and he wrote some books, and it was a lot of fun. I noticed that Car Magazine got his son to try to duplicate that about 4 months ago, and they got some tickets too. So
yeah, they did it's been 40 years since the original Cannonball Baker Sea to Shining Sea Memorial Dash. That's what they first called the Cannonball Run. It's a lot harder to do that now, but you can do it faster. A buddy of mine, Alex Roy, got famous for breaking the cross-country record in his BMW M5, and he wrote a book about it.
Oh,
it's still kind of the holy grail for
that.
The car guy.
But
Brock Yates's son, Brock Jr., does something called One Lap of America that has kind of been an outgrowth of Cannonball, because the Cannonball is just, I mean, there's only so much civil disobedience that a man's license can take.
The reason I mention it is because of, and your editorial writers are wonderful too, that they actually delve into, and they're not just talking about cars, but they're talking about social issues that are part of the car culture and our own culture as it relates to automobiles. And the Cannonball race actually began as really a protest against what was a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit back in olden days. And they said, look, it is safe to go much, much faster with relatively average cars. I mean, they souped them up a little, but one time they were using a minivan.
That's what the roads were designed for. They're designed for 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, the roads were, and the cars were, too. So it was they were trying to make a point of social criticism by it, not just going crazy and maybe endangering people, even though they probably were. But
you know, legacy at this magazine for doing stuff like that. The fact of the matter is, the car doesn't exist in a vacuum.
No.
You know, we all experience them. They touch every aspect of modern life. So to ignore some of the political issues or some of the social and sociological issues surrounding it would be a disservice to our reader. And Car and Driver has always had the sort of most, I think, literary aspirations of any car magazine. We love to tell great stories.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, the car testing is kind of the foundation of what we do, and I feel like we do it better than anyone else. But on top of all that, we have to celebrate the car as, you know, a piece of industrial design, as an instrument of personal freedom, and as just a great, fun object.
It's interesting to me that each year, each magazine, although they did slightly different criteria, but when they talk about their 10 or dozen all-stars, as Automobile Magazine calls them, or best of the year, they don't agree on much. For example, you folks put Ford Mustang GT in there, and Automobile put Chevy Camaro. Now, again, same category, but just depends on your staff and maybe how that
and it depends
car handled
on our
when you had it
too,
mm-hmm.
in some way.
Oh, yeah?
You know,
mm-hmm.
our audience is looking for the highest performing vehicle in the segment, and we do a lot of testing to confirm or dispel those claims. So, you know, in our latest exotic car test, we had the 458 Italia that you talked about up against the 911 Turbo and some other cars, and the 911 Turbo beat it.
Mm-hmm.
First, it was half the price, and secondly, it was faster. And for our audience, this was the right call. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of reader feedback that said, thank you for not making the $300,000 Ferrari the winner, because all rational signs point to the Porsche winning. So it really depends on your audience and who you're speaking to. And our audience is a little bit more of a tech geek, more tech savvy, more mechanically oriented than I think other car magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was interesting, even with the different criteria and different audiences, that in those best list between you and Automobile Magazine. The Porsche Boxster Cayman was on both, and BMW 3 Series, they specifically mentioned the 335 diesel four-door sedans. But that you just mentioned the whole series, including their M3. So you did agree, even with a different criteria on
some cars are just
undeniably
great, and they're just such leaders and such benchmarks that everybody in the industry is chasing them. And 3 Series is one of those cars. Boxster Cayman is definitely one of those lineups, too.
I have to wrap up here in a moment. It's been wonderfully talking to you. I wanted to mention that on this show, even since I'm kind of a car guy, and every now and then, of course, you know, Ford Motor Company is right here in Dearborn, where they're our station is a stone's throw away from, and so we do talk about automobile issues every now and then. Your October 10th issue last year, October 2010, was a best handling test, and I just wanted to say bravo for that.
Thank you. A lot
of people don't understand how handling, which incorporates performance, but many other like human factors, it may be the most important thing.
It is.
It's not just straight line performance or how fast you can brake, but all of it together as a package. And thanks for, of course, you had the numbers there too. You only had 6 cars. You could only do 6 cars intensively, I think, in that test. But really an important awareness to open up for people that I don't think had been adequately covered before. So
thank you very much for saying that. We really think that handling is one of the hardest to define things, but that makes it all the more critical to define and to get our arms around it. And it really is a subjective thing, and how well the car communicates with its driver. Very hard thing to get into numbers or get into words, but we tried and we'll keep trying.
Well, it's always entertaining. There's always something new in your business, and that's true, I guess, in politics and news in general, but it's got to be exciting coming to work, unless you get a lot of low-end turkeys coming in to test drive.
This is probably the best time to do what we are doing, because the car business is a total state of flux and change. We haven't seen anything like this for 100 years, and it's very, very exciting to be a car enthusiast right now, because there's so much great stuff happening, and it's great to be able to comment about it. I mean, this is the best job in the world.
Well, it's an exciting thing to follow, and I recommend to all our audience, it's a although I don't recommend Consumer Reports car testing as the only criteria.
They do a good job.
They do a good job for what they're looking at, you know.
Right, for their audience.
Right, for their audience. And I always read them, too. But I think it's if it's the second largest financial purchase that most people are going to make in their lives, which they make frequently every couple years, every 3 to 7 years at least anyway, they should really investigate and look more closely at things. I'm always so sad when some of the people I talk to say, you know, I hate to drive. It's so boring. So dangerous. And I'm thinking, wow, if you just had a little bit better car, even your daily commute could be exhilarating, and it would be less, if it's less boring, maybe you'd pay more attention to your driving and, be
absolutely
safer.
Absolutely.
Be safer, actually.
To save the manual transmission, because...
Oh, I love that. I got my sticker.
Yeah, we want more driver engagement.
That's
not
called
less.
Save the manuals, folks. Do you have more stickers available?
Yeah, I'll send you some. Yeah.
Well, okay, because I've got one, but it's never enough. I'm sorry to say, I just bought a BMW X5 diesel. They had a big discount through October, and of course, there's federal diesel credit, and the dealer went crazy, and I didn't think I could afford anything like that, but it only came with an automatic. Darn. But it's a turbo diesel, so exciting. And so we've been talking about diesels a lot here. You have any word about diesels? You think that's a good transition thing that we should be doing more of? Europe is 60% diesel with new car purchases.
Yeah, and I think it's a complicated political issue. Our government is really subsidizing and supporting electric vehicles. And I think part of the reason for that is... they got diesel penetration up so high in Europe because they levied a gas tax
on the consumer gasoline, right?
Right. So they made diesel much more palatable,
right?
And there is a real political reluctance to levy a gas tax in the U.S. So I love diesels. I think that the energy density of the fuel is fantastic, and they've cleaned them up. Mm-hmm. So now that you get incredible torque, incredible range, and as you see in your X5, it's a wonderful driving experience.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of power, and it just feels fantastic.
I had in one of my weaker moments, I bought a Mercury Mountaineer, like a Ford Explorer, many years ago, about 8-10 years ago, right before the tip-over problems. And just one of the worst handling cars. I know it was a big, heavy car, and you said, well, you expect the wind to tip it over a little. Just wasn't used to that because I had other well-performing cars. And the X5 has none of that. I thought, oh, it's going to be a little tippy or difficult to go around. So it's possible to design cars that, even in the larger sizes, that handle really well. And diesel does get more gas economy right now. And I found in Dearborn anyway, since we're by several major roads, that it's pretty easy to find a station like 1 in 3, 1 in 4 will have a diesel pump, although it costs the same as premium in the U.S. right now. But oh well. So we'll see how the transition goes. Stay on top of the excitement. And thank you, Eddie Alderman, for being with us today from Car and Driver Magazine. Your website, of course, is carandriver.com.
Yeah. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah. Thanks for the word. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And we're happy to have done that interview. Hope you got some good ideas out of it. Hope you, if you haven't gotten down to the auto show, you probably could. It's a social event. Dennis hasn't gotten down there yet.
No, I have not. But you know what? I live vicariously through you anyway when you go down there. You're so descriptive when you come back. Seriously, I don't feel the need to actually have to physically go.
Well, I did have a lot of fun there. As typical, every year it's frustrating getting down. There's always a traffic jam or an accident on the expressways. It took me an hour to get down there because most of the lanes of I was coming from Royal Oak, I-75 were closed because of an accident. And, of course, it was raining. It was bad weather on Tuesday, raining, snowing, sleeting. And then parking in Detroit. You think, well, there's nobody in Detroit anymore. Well, parking is crazy. It was hard to find a lot. Everybody was backed up to try to, they were waiting in line 50 deep, I think, I counted, trying to even get up to Cobo Roof.
Really?
Because they wouldn't let people in until somebody came out.
Right.
So they're all backed up waiting. Oh, my God. And that was a traffic jam,
too. That's my favorite place to park, too.
Yeah. And then I found a lot, and they had to bury me in the back because they were, like, double booking. I wasn't in a lane.
Oh, no kidding.
And I didn't think I'd get out, but they have ways of moving cars.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that stuff, but leave it to the experts.
And then I get to Cobo Arena, and it wasn't too crowded. It was, like, noon on Tuesday, and then oh, my gosh, like 4 busloads of people came out from the river entrance, and they all seemed to be working for an automobile manufacturer or a vendor, and it was huge crowds. I mean, it was push and shove, wall-to-wall people, and I got stuck in the middle of it as I was entering in, and they were making comments like body work and paint problems. And so they had to be all involved with automotive manufacturing.
Different
somehow.
Departments or something.
Yeah,
sure.
like they all just took a bus trip, a field trip, the whole company, and decided to go down there and actually, touch the paint and see how the doors were fit and so on.
Well,
and
can I tell you that the description you just gave doesn't make me really want to go down? I can watch it on TV.
You just don't know. I mean, I did get to sit in some cars. I got some photos, but I had to wait until people cleared away in order to even get a clear shot of some of the pictures.
Did you see that soap opera star down there, whatever her name is?
No, I always look for, like, handsome guys and gals, models, but now I saw one mini-skirted woman standing back against a wall in one exhibit. I guess it wasn't her time to talk or something.
Yeah, but, it's kind of weird.
So there wasn't the glitz and glamour. I mean, I went to the auto show every year. My dad used to work for Chrysler Corporation on the line, as they say, in the 50s and 60s. And so we always went down there, and there was so much showbiz.
It was spectacle.
Spectacle.
It was huge.
Yeah.
I remember that.
For the average person, that was very entertaining, too. But it's okay.
Right.
It's still important to do in Detroit. Things are changing. It's an important insight into the cars to see so many of the different models at the same time. Very often, I see something I didn't even know existed. I mean, not a concept car, but something that's out there on sale. I didn't even know it existed. For some reason, even with reading all the magazines, I had just missed it. And some cars just look really impressive in person. Let's see.
Well, that was interesting that even Eddie, I know you're moving on here, but even Eddie had just said that cars are just cool. He just like as...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but then you guys wrap in all the culture and things that go with each generation.
Yeah, it's certainly a just like you, people dress for success or dress for status with the clothes they put on each day. Mm-hmm. The kind of car you have does sort of say the kind of person you are. But I hope in the future that kind of person would be a sensible, value-oriented, energy-saving kind of person.
Right.
You know, I hope that would be a positive thing, a high status thing in the future, too. I think things are changing. It's not just a muscle car.
No, but too often people buy cars that don't accurately describe them, and we've all seen it. You know?
Well, that's true.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
My car would say that I'm a broken-down person on the side of the road.
Okay. No, you're saving your money for your next great car. That's what you're doing.
Oh, I like your twist on
that. Yeah, okay.
Beautiful. Do you, here, I have this for you.
Oh, okay.
I had a question about that, by the way.
Yeah, let's take a break and listen to a couple comments from Jim Hightower, and we'll be back with the other stories I mentioned earlier about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Here's Jim Hightower playing with Economic Dynamite and also dumping on Texas, as we did a couple weeks ago, which is his home state. So I guess he's got a right there. Take a listen, and we'll be back with more Journal.
Wow, profits are up. The stock market is soaring. Corporations are awash in cash. CEOs are reaping fabulous paychecks again, and holiday spending reached its highest level in 4 years. Forget last year's talk of gloom. All economic indicators are now on Zoom, headed for a new boom. Well, maybe not all indicators. There is that pesky little problem of joblessness, for instance. Most politicos and economists, however, no longer want to be bothered with the fact that millions of our people are either unemployed or underemployed. Jobs, they say dismissively, are merely a, quote, lagging economic indicator, a problem that'll take care of itself in the by and by. But jobs have been lagging for years now, and there's no sign that this problem will ever take care of itself. To the contrary, America's corporate elite have learned that they can prosper by deliberately holding the workaday majority in a new normal of job insecurity. No one at the top wants to admit it, but big business has quietly been imposing a structural transformation on our economy, shifting from a workforce of permanent employees to one in which most jobs are temporary, scarce, low-paid, without benefits, and with no upward mobility. Of the 1.2 million jobs created by the private sector last year, for example, 26% were temporary positions, and in November, temp jobs were 80% of that month's total. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's happening here is the intentional dismantling of America's middle-class structure. The powers that be can talk all they want about a boom, but working families, America's majority, know better. A boom for whom, they ask. They can plainly see that self-serving elites are jerry-rigging the job market, lowering the standard of living, and closing opportunities for millions of the American people. The elites have not figured it out yet, but they are playing with economic and political dynamite that really might go boom.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you, California. And you too, Florida, Maine, Missouri, and 32 other states that intend to send a very special gift to Texas, namely their radioactive waste. Now there's a gift that truly keeps on giving. Of course, Texas asked for it. Well, actually, only two Texans. They had the clout to open a private radioactive waste dump in our state. First approved in 2003, the 1,300-acre site, which endangers freshwater aquifers that supply water to thousands of people in West Texas, was originally meant to take waste from just two states. But now, thanks to this pair of insistent Texans, the dump is being opened to 36 more states. Who are these dump-on-Texas enthusiasts? One is a right-wing Dallas billionaire named Harold Simmons. He's chairman of a corporation named Waste Control Specialists. WCS's specialty is hustling government contracts for its own fun and profit. Indeed, Simmons' outfit is the sole company in the whole USA to be licensed by the Texas Environmental Agency to import this waste into our state. Now, from stage right, enters Rick Perry, the Texas governor who rose from being a Texas A&M cheerleader to leading cheers for the Simmons dump. Why is Perry so peppy for radioactive waste? Because Simmons is his second largest campaign money man, having dumped $500,000 into the governor's re-election effort last year alone. Only 2 months after November's election, the commission overseeing radioactive waste disposal voted on January 4th to increase the profitability of Simmons Dump by letting him haul in waste and profits from 36 more states. All six Texans on the commission were appointed by Perry. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you're keeping score on this exciting game of quid pro quo politics, it's $500,000 for Perry, untold millions for Simmons, and zero for the people.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
WHFR.FM is celebrating our 25th anniversary on the air. Consider this your formal invitation to join us in the celebration. The WHFR 25th Anniversary Party will take place Saturday, January 22nd at the broadcast booth in Allen Park, and will feature live bands, great door prizes, great food and beverages available for purchase, and a lot of fun. Live acts include the Anthony Lye Band.
I'm going home, where the winters are white, what a beautiful sight to see.
The White Ravens.
Ooh-wee-oo, tonight stars won't wait for you again. Ooh-wee-oo.
And the Wall Clocks.
Well, this summer has been so good to me. I don't want it to end, and I'm trying to hold on to something. You know, I always remember.
The broadcast booth is located in Allen Park, Michigan at 6550 Allen Road, just west of Southfield Road. Doors are at 8:30 with live music starting at 9. Admission is just $5 at the door, benefiting WHFR.FM. 21 and over, please. For more information, check out our website, www.whfr.fm. We look forward to partying with you at the WHFR 25th Anniversary Party, Saturday, January 22nd.
Jay and Dennis are back with you here on the new WHFR Journal for Friday, January 21st, our auto show special edition. That party, wow, 25 years, it's about time to party. I mean, we've already begun our 26th year now.
Right.
But you're going to make it, Dennis?
I absolutely will, and okay. I know you'll be there.
Right? I wouldn't miss it since... although it makes me feel so old to have been around through most, well, through all those years.
But. Well, I was going to ask you, without making a crack about the memory, do you remember 25 years ago what it was like? Was it a little bit different than now?
Well, we were, broadcasting fewer hours a week, and it was from the basement of the Fine Arts Building.
So only a little differences.
Which, it was really a basement. They hadn't really done air circulation or water or electrical upgrades for us. We just found a basement storage room.
Our same storage room?
Yes.
Interesting.
It was across the hall, F8 instead of F10.
Still the same
but
kind of a
it's now a storage room for the graphics department paper supplies.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because it does have great ventilation and is a good facility. But we always had about 30 or 40 volunteers. It's true we have 60 to 70 volunteers right now. And it really is not too different in excitement and format than it was then. Always looking at local artists. So Laura Rousset, our operations manager, is here. In fact, she's getting ready to take some stuff, package some stuff up for our exciting 25th anniversary party. Laura, or should I say Mrs. Robinson, how is it going for you?
It's going great. Let's see. I have some golden oldie items for, it's not 25 years old, but it's maybe close to 10 for certain items.
Around here, that's great.
It's great.
The last
for some of the raffle items, I will keep those top
yes,
secret.
Yes, there's going to be a raffle. You get tickets at the door. It's $5 a person. Okay, not asking very much if you stay for the evening. Music starts at 9, doors open at 8, and goes until 1 in the morning. These three great local indie rock bands are going to be performing there. And we'll have raffle drawings, special door prizes, as they call them, for you. And so fun time we had by all. Now, the broadcast booth is not really a broadcasting booth, but it is sort of a sports bar, and they've got fairly good food, which I'm going to check out. And all the proceeds, the bands are playing for nothing for us, just because they love us, and we help promote them and many others here all the time at WHFR. And so all of the $5 is really a donation to help benefit WHFR. We've got to do several of these events each year anyway, and hey, a 25th party only comes once every 25 years, so actually only comes once, and so we got to do this. So thank you for getting the stuff together today, Laura.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I haven't actually started yet. But
tell him that.
Yeah, no, I have it all. I found some things while I was looking for. Some people were reminiscing, and they wanted me to find something if I still had it, an old cassette tape. And while I was digging through my desk drawer, I'm like, oh wow, these will be great for the raffle. So anyone remembers our move to
stickers
to the new studio.
Move magnets, yes.
There's a few of those type of items, and so it's going to be fun. Besides raffle items, it's going to be a great event. Both old alumni, current DJs, and I even know a few people that came to our 20th anniversary party that's excited to come to our 25th. Some of our loyal listeners that we typically see at some of our blues mm-hmm. benefits and that sort of thing, I know they're coming. And some people that they're like, oh my gosh, I was a part of, the radio before it was WHFR. I'm going to be there.
So
it's going to be a great, great event, and you do not want to miss it.
I know we've got the word out on our website, and our Facebook account and our Facebook friends are spreading the word. So we haven't been promoting it as a reunion per se, but of course, anybody that loves what we do and maybe have been part of it themselves, come on down. It'll be a hot night on a cold night.
Yes, definitely.
But
I won't go.
It's a way to get warm.
Just kidding.
We'll warm you up if you get inside. So again, broadcast booth, Allen Road in downtown Allen Park.
And just a tip. Here's a tip. You're gonna wanna you are going to enter from the parking lot entrance, so it's not off of Allen Road. So anyone go around the back. And if you're coming from, taking Southfield South, right when you pass Roosevelt, when you see the Ruby Tuesdays, see the PNC Bank, and Marshall Music, there's a street.
It's a hard right.
It's a hard right. Yeah. And it's right before the Allen Road right.
You can see their sign from there also.
Yes.
You know where they're at.
So as soon as you make that right into the parking lot, you'll be able to get in and find great parking. And it's free parking. So that's the way you want to go. So if you do park on Allen, you're going to have to walk around the block. So we really want you to enter from the parking lot entrance.
Thank you for that report.
All right.
Laura, also known as Mrs. Robinson.
And like the wind, she's gone.
Poof.
That's it.
That's the way it is in radio.
I guess. Fleeting. Very fleeting.
Back to Automobile Edition, Special Edition. One of the things that happened behind the scenes during the press preview week, reported by tinygreenbubble.com, a website, I think it's .com, might be .org. It's a green website, and they cover a lot of eco news, energy news, Tiny Green Bubble, look it up. And they were at a session, and Susan Sischke, Sischke, Ford Motor Company, Group Vice President of Sustainability, Environment, and Safety Engineering. Whoa, what a big job.
Heck of a title.
That should actually be the job of everybody over there, but nonetheless, she's the VP for it. And I guess has to fight for those things every day. But one of the main points she made during her hour-long discussion of Ford's sustainability efforts was the growing populations in megacities around the world and how that necessitates that we move away from the old model of one car for every person. She also mentioned the need for more investment in public transportation systems. And this seems, whoa, how can a Ford Motor Company person, executive, think we need to make it more convenient to people to not use their car?
Wow, she didn't know the mic was on.
Yeah, right, because afterwards, too, during the Q&A, She responded further, saying, "It's just not feasible for the billions of people in the rapidly developing countries of China, India, and Brazil to have the same car culture as those of us living in the U.S. Aside from the massive environmental impacts associated with so many more cars on the road, the price of oil from the expected exponential increase in demand will make car ownership much more expensive than it is today. Even electric cars," she says, VP of Ford Motor, "don't solve the problem of congestion and parking space associated with driving in a large city." I remember that Peking, China, their central capital city of all of communist red China, they had all these people, and I don't know how many. It's more than New York. It's just billions, whatever. No, and in the whole country, there's, of course, billions, but I think 1.5 billion in red China right now alone. But in their capital city, everybody was primarily getting by on bicycles. So there wasn't a lot of people riding bikes on their main roads. I mean, you know, almost shoulder to shoulder, bicyclists going to work and coming back. But they're rapidly switching over to buying cars. You know, the standard of living is going up, so people can afford cars made in China or elsewhere now. Oh, my God, they got the worst congestion in the world because they can't fit cars for all the people they have.
Right.
They should really stay with bikes, which is, I think, the answer for a lot of cities in the U.S. is to emphasize and collaborate on more bikes.
Siski, is that her name? I don't think she'd go that far.
She's saying mega cities around the world,
right.
and certainly they shouldn't radically, with their large population, switch over from whatever they're using to automobiles. Nonetheless, Ford does want to sell a lot of cars. And, of course, New York City has that kind of problem right now.
Oh, yeah.
So you just, that's why if you live in New York, you don't really want to own a car. You don't have to own a car either. I mean, the traffic jams resulting from taxis are bad enough.
That is pretty bad.
All the taxis alone.
The subways underground are great. But, you know, the cities that have to deal with this, like Chicago and New York, already do a great job with their public transportation. When I lived in New York 20 years ago, it was bad. I can only imagine it's a lot worse now. But my boss paid $250 a month just to park his car. And I said, well, how often do you drive it? He said, maybe once a month.
And we just don't have a viable public transport system in Detroit because even the bus lines have fewer routes now because
exactly.
of cost. And that's really sad. So we'll see where Detroit's going to go in that regard. But all of us can do the right thing. I'm going to look back briefly, in Dearborn Press and Guide, trying to stay with the automobile edition today, except maybe at the end I'll mention two or three other things. In the Press and Guide from last Sunday, headline story, front page, Ford success means more jobs in Dearborn. That's not necessarily the case so much as it might sound, right, Dennis?
It's almost misleading because and J. Patrick Pepper, whose stories we read regularly on the show, just to read the first paragraph really quick, it says, in the latest sign of the company's growing success, Ford on Monday announced it would add 7,000 new hourly and salary jobs by 2012. Here's my favorite part. Likely including several hundred engineering positions in Dearborn. But then that's about all you hear for the rest of the article.
Right, and they don't indicate they're going to hire back anybody they've laid off.
Not at all.
Or ask people that have gotten their early retirements and already spent all the money to come back, even though they are Ford employees and maybe even qualified. So I was kind of unfortunate about that. But no, it's not, even for a headline story, it's not as blatantly wonderful. But I think somehow Ford's PR people wanted to balance that headline in the December Press and Guide about, oh, Ford made $2.18 billion profit
right.
last year. So that certainly Dearborn people's minds, well, are they going to hire anybody now that they're so profitable? Well, they are. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Big. But not so much in Dearborn and not right away.
No, but definitely in Louisville.
Yeah. Oh,
we,
good.
Yeah, we
good for Louisville.
Good for Louisville.
Okay.
But that's about it. And it talks about how we're one of the cities that will be working on, you know, they're recruiting engineers specifically for the electric cars.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
So with 4 minutes to go, I'm going to hop around here. Coming up is Highway 61, the Best in Blues with Joanne Kay at 2 o'clock or so. Dearborn philanthropist and former department store owner Alberta Muirhead died in the last week or so, and she was a great friend of the community. And I remember just the Muirhead department store, since I've been living in Dearborn about 30 plus years, along with Adria Appliance as the two stores that were the friendliest. I mean, they had real people that lived in the community. They would talk to you. They would advise you as a real human being.
That was definitely my experience with
Adre. And at Adre, imagine the salespeople weren't even getting commissions. So they didn't have to sell you anything. They'd still, if they didn't want to, but they could actually advise you honestly about what was good. And Muirheads was a warm and friendly place. Alberta and her husband, of course, involved in that for many years. Now it's a health center, Oakwood,
Michigan
Avenue. But
the Muirhead building.
So we don't usually mention people who pass in Dearborn, but it is sad, but a lot of great people have contributed a lot to Dearborn, and Alberta was not connected with WHFR directly at all, but we just wanted to mention her passing with respect, certainly. Dearborn Animal Shelter, it doesn't come up till February 19th, but they have their annual Cool Cat Casino Night. So for the big-time gamblers out there, that's going to be at the Knights of Columbus Hall because, you know, Catholic gamblers are the best, I guess, on Park Street in Dearborn. No, thanks to the Knights of Columbus for donating that. I assume they're not charging the animal shelter anything for the rental of their hall for that. I hope they're not, but that's on February 19th. School Board has elected new officers here in Dearborn, and congratulations to Jim School. Master, I guess it was his turn or whatever. They sort of rotate. I mean, yeah. I think it's sort of a rotation thing, but we hope to get him here on the Journal to talk about his plans and what's coming up with the school board and budget-wise, of course, and staffing-wise. I mean, they've laid off teachers every year for the last, I think, 6 years in a row.
Right.
I don't know how much further we can go with that. The Dearborn Community Arts Council 23rd Annual Mayor's Awards are going to happen on February 10th at the Center, public invited, February 10th. Okay, and a couple of people we know and friends of ours, Ben Bacharach, who is also part of, I think it's Rotary in Dearborn, yeah,
really?
And has helped make contributions, helped the Rotary make contributions and support WHFR, but he's going to be recognized as a Volunteer of the Year.
Okay.
Because he's helped many communities. He was formerly in the business office of Ford Motor Company. He's retired from that, but again, giving back to the community just really wonderfully. And I think, some sort of Detroit Motor City Jazz Band won the Organization Award of the Year. So a music-related group actually won one of the Organization Awards.
Oh, okay.
So good for them. Last but not least, and Joanne's going to mention it too, Global Thursdays have started again at the Arab American National Museum on Michigan Avenue, except it begins, their series for 2011 begins tonight on a Friday.
Right.
A little contradiction in terms there, but it's going to go back to Thursdays, folks. But tonight, it's famous blues, Detroit blues diva Alberta Adams, backed up by R.J. Spangler and his band. Fantastic performance, 7:30 tonight.
Wasn't she a Concert of Colors as part of the big review?
Yeah, at the Arab American National Museum.
Beautiful.
And she's got a great album out that we've been playing for the last year or so. So don't miss Alberta Adams, not Alberta Muirhead, who died, but Alberta Adams did not die. She's performing live tonight at the Arab American National Museum. Hope to see you at the 25th birthday party for WHFR, folks. It is WHFR Dearborn, 2:00. We're waiting for Joanne.
She just walked in, I think.
Get in. Okay.
Hey, we were at
starting shortly.
The sustainability thing yesterday.
Yes, yes.
And I do know that some of that, most of it was redundant for you, but wouldn't you think somebody going in with limited awareness would gain a lot from these panels?
Yeah, and we'll keep you updated when the next ones are coming up. First of all, they're doing it one time a month, the sustainability meeting, a Sierra Club Cool Cities. But in fact, I was interested that the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights was really a co-sponsor.
Big time.
And and Mary Bougea, who is the president of that, is also going to be the host and the chair of the financial forum with Mayor O'Reilly.
Wonderful.
Next Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the Henry Ford Centennial Library. I mentioned that at the start of the show, but for people who tuned in late, get over there. The press and guide didn't get the day, date, time, but it's Thursday, next week Thursday, January 27th. I'm going to be there, I know, at Centennial Library, 7 p.m. to take notes, and we'll let you know more about that. That's the mayor's spin and maybe some updates on the economic suggestions for Dearborn's budget proposed by a committee last spring. So we're looking forward to that.